So we're sticking with entomopathogenic nematodes, but now we're going to Florida citrus groves where we're trying to control the Diaprepes root weevil. We've been using augmentation historically, but now we're taking a closer look at conservation biological control. So that's the story I'll be giving you today. If you're not familiar with the Diaprepes root weevil, it's a fairly large, colorful weevil, native to the Caribbean, was first detected in Florida in 1964.
Our central question here is, does predator diversity amplify non-significant
mortality? And further studies are planned now to determine whether the ivermectin can be delivered orally to wild rodents in a bait plug formulation and achieve blood levels of the drug that impact against blood feeding sandflies. And ivermectin may be excreted by treated rodent at levels that also cause significant mortality to the larval stage of the sandfly. So if ivermectin could be delivered to the wild population of animals serving as a blood meal host for sandflies, we may achieve some measures of control against the vector of cutaneous leishmaniasis. So at the end, I would like to thank our collaborators in the Namlusri and from Faculty of Science, Helwan University, and the Egyptian Company for Chemicals and Pharmaceuticals, Cairo Easy. Thank you.
We have plenty of time for questions.
Yes.
Thank you, Hamid. Good presentation. Have you done any study to show that hamster actually metabolize ivermectin or not?
Yes. The question is: is there any study that shows that the metabolize of the ivermectin the hamster? Correct? Yeah. Actually, no. There is a lot of studies being done to study the pharmacokinetical, I don't remember the name, but it shows, you know, the half-life time of the ivermectin is a species specific or based or different or vary from animals to another animal. And I still remember verses called Valeri and Tajin in 1998. He did a good study, and this study has been published in a Vet Medicine Journal. And he did the study upon the recommended dosages for the bit animals, and he showed that the recommended dosages for the rodents 200 or 400 microgram per kilogram that probably can persist or exist longer time in the animals, so and could be used as anti-parasitic drugs for endoparasite and ectoparasite.
How long is that?
The half-life time is vary, and as I mentioned, the species is specific. It vary from animals to another animal. It can cause from hours to days. And I still remember, you know, a verse called Foley. He did, you know, a study on the ivermectin and the anopheles species, and using human volunteers. And he found after 6 weeks of inoculating the ivermectin, the human volunteers still affect, you know, the anopheles species and the cause mortality. That means that it could be vary from animals to another or from human and so on.
I have a question. It extends that question a little bit. If you think in terms of the bioavailability of ivermectin to feeding the animals, how long would ivermectin last out in the desert areas?
As I mentioned here, that if we can, first of all, the ivermectin can persist in the animals for a long time if there is a supply all the time. So that's why in the future we are planning to develop, you know, a formula.
But I'm asking in terms of the effect of temperature. On the preparation itself, because you're mixing with the food and you're going to put the bait out by the boils.
How long
is ivermectin stable?
This is a good question, but you know, I'm an entomologist, I'm not biochemist, so probably I'm going to ask these questions to a biochemist. I'm an entomologist, I don't know.
Hmm.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hanafy.
Mainly due, probably, most likely due to the introduction of air conditioning into the sleeping quarters of places where the soldiers were staying. Unfortunately, soldiers are not able to carry an air conditioner on their backpacks when they go to a lot of places. So even though this has worked to some extent, the soldiers are still exposed to a lot of leishmaniasis and a lot of sand fly pressure as they do their activities. One of the things that we began to look at Walter Reed was the effect of bed nets and the use of bed nets as a means of personal protection and as a means of keeping a method of preventing biting of the sandflies. A little bit of background. With our personal protective measures, even though the soldiers had repellents, they did have bed nets, and they had permethrin-treated uniforms, we still, under these conditions, still had soldiers coming back with leishmaniasis, so there wasn't enough personal protection to actually prevent the disease as much as we really need to. So the standard military bed net is pictured here in this lower photograph, if I can get the pointer to work here. And this has a very, very fine mesh of about 900 holes per square inch. And generally, this is enough to prevent sandflies from getting through. However, because of its very fine pore size, it also prevents a lot of ventilation. And in the kind of habitats that the soldiers were working in, you would find them sleeping on the hoods of their Humvees rather than in these tents because they were just too hot. And so the bed net program that Gabby began to work on at Walter Reed was to develop an improved self-supporting bed net that is suitable for long-term deployment. And one of the things they wanted to look at was if they were able to increase the size of the openings in these netting so that there's more ventilation but still able to prevent sand flies from coming through the nets and biting. And one of the ways to do this was to incorporate pesticide into the bed net. And so this was Gabby's objective here. And so she was actually begin by evaluating different types of what she calls long-lasting impregnated bed nets from different sources in industry. Okay, so the ones that she looked at were Permanet, which is from Vesta Garden. And this is a deltamethrin treated net, and it comes in a variety of sizes from 156 mesh to over 625. We as controls use some of their untreated nets that range from 156 to 270 mesh. And then Oliset from Sumitomo, and this is a permethrin treated bed net, and they had two sizes, a 50 and a 100 mesh. And then Inceptor had an alpha cypermethrin treated bed mesh of 625 mesh. And so with these trials and assays, she included a positive control of untreated net of approximately 270 mesh and the standard military mesh of 900 openings. Basically, there were four assays that were used in evaluating these different bed nets. A bed net cup bioassay, and this is sort of like the WHO toxicity assay where the sand flies were exposed, of course, to make contact with the bed net and then looked at the killing of them. And then a bed net size bioassay to determine what size you could actually get away with and use. And this was only done with the Permanet because this was the only one that had multiple sizes of bed nets that were treated. And then a comparison of the different bed nets to see how they stacked up against each other. Some treated with deltamethrin, permethrin, or cypermethrin. And then a contact feeding bioassay to see if an animal or a human actually were up against the bed net. Would the flies come to that bed net even though it was treated and feed through it and potentially transmit leishmaniasis in that manner? Okay, as far as the materials were concerned, She used Papatossi, Phlebotomus papatossi, from our rare colony, and mice as the animal model, and then these bioassay chambers that are modified from the chambers that, that Graco developed for looking at mosquito assays. This is basically a two-chamber device that has a door in it, and you introduce the flies to one side, and you can put a screen to separate the two chambers and see how the flies go back and forth between the two chambers. In this case, the sand flies were actually released into the metal chamber, and the animal was put into the clear chamber. Okay, the first bioassay, the bed net cup bioassay, and this is to confirm that the insecticide being used is actually toxic to the sand flies. And in this case, we had pint paper cups that the entire inside was lined with the treated nets, and they were exposed to this net and for 3 minutes, and then they were removed and set aside and looked at both the knockdown rate and the killing rate. The second assay, the mesh size bioassay, again, it was this was set up in the chambers, and so the different netting materials were put at the door, and the sand flies had to travel through this netting to get to the animals, and so records were kept on the number of sand flies that passed through the net, the number of sand flies that fed, and the number of sand flies that might went back the other way through the net. This shows the pore sizes in relation to sand fly size. For the permanent, the 156 mesh was the largest, and as you can see, really sand flies have very little trouble getting through that. But even with the 625 mesh that is much smaller here, untreated nets, sand flies can go through that pretty well too. They kind of wiggle their way and are very good escape artists. So this is the number of sand flies in each chamber with the different size nets over here on the left, the treated and the untreated, and the sand flies starting off in the release chamber and those that moved to the mouse chamber. As you see, there's a general reduction in the number that can pass through as the net becomes smaller. And then the treated net here, or the untreated net, they seem to go through pretty well. So as she points out here, sand flies are able to get through the netting of all the mesh sizes, including the very small 625 mesh. Okay, then the percentage of fed sand flies in each chamber. You see the sand flies move from the chamber over to the mouse chamber and blood fed, and with various pesticides, deltamethrin did not deter the feeding when they went through at all. So even though they were exposed to this pesticide by making contact with the net, they were able to get through and feed sufficiently. And there was no significant difference between percent of flies that fed and the actual size of the net they would have to go through. And you would assume that the smaller the bed net, the more contact and more effort they would have to make to actually get through it. And so they would be actually exposed to the pesticide for a greater amount of time. In general, after they blood fed, they were too fat to get back through the other way, so they kind of remained in the side of the chamber where the mouse was at. The knockdown and mortality rates of sand flies in each chamber. The knockdown mortality was higher for sand flies passing through the permanet compared with untreated net and no nets. For each net, the knockdown and mortality was not significantly different at different time intervals, except for sand flies passing through the very smaller, or the bigger nets, I'm sorry, the bigger hole sizes. Okay, the bed net bioassay determined which type of long-lasting impregnated net. deltamethrin, permethrin, or alpha cyphermethrin is most effective against sandflies. And this diagram here shows the net that the flies have to get through to get to the mouse. And again, these are the different meshes they had. We actually used the army net as a control. Again, the number of sandflies in each chamber, fed and unfed, in the sandfly chamber and the mouse chamber for permethrin, we had the highest number of sandflies getting through and being fed, and then alpha cyphermethrin, deltamethrin. If I remember right, they weren't statistical difference, although there is a difference here. Percentage of sandflies in each chamber for each one. Again, a lot of the sandflies got through to the mouse chamber. The insecticide treatment did not deter feeding after sandflies passed through for any of the type of pesticides that were used. For untreated net, no sandflies bled and fed were unable to get through the net. Fed sandflies were probably too large to pass back and forth, as we mentioned earlier. The kill rate and the knockdown in flies, there was no kill rate or knockdown observed in the controls. Each of the treated nets did end up causing a knockdown in the mortality, including unfed and also fed sandflies. Deltamethrin had the highest knockdown and mortality rate, particularly for unfed flies in the sandfly chamber. Okay, the last bioassay was a contact feeding bioassay, and in this situation, the mouse's tail was put into a box or a container containing the sandflies, and then there was the netting was actually not stapled to, but stapled around the tail, so that it prevented had a barrier between the tail and the sandflies, but was in contact with the tail. And then the controls, there was no netting. So this here shows the layout of the experiment and the two chambers. Okay, again, the insecticide treatment did not deter the sandflies from feeding on the mouse tail through any of the netting material. And there was no difference in feeding